were just talking about the tablets of stone, and probably a lot of y'all are sitting there saying, if you're ever going to get around to the first three statements, at least on the tablets of stone. And we have arrived at that point. To me, it's kind of like painting a portrait. It takes a lot of preliminary work before the thing starts to take shape. But we're at the picture now on the first three statements I'd like to cover on the tablets of stone. And as a preliminary, these are non-negotiable. If one wishes to be part of Yahweh's family and dwell with him in his home, they're not commands, because commands have to be obeyed. He urges us. He does want us to do these things. He wants us to understand these things that are very, very important. But these are basically the ground rules. He's inviting us into his family, into his home, and there's certain prerequisites in order to dwell there. They're all volitional. Everything in the Torah, believe it or not, is volitional. It is something that you can choose to do and you can choose not to do. For instance, you can choose to take his advice, follow his advice, and reap the benefits. You can ignore his advice and wander off and just say the heck with it. Or you can align yourself actually against his teaching, which is what religion and politics and the things that we open the show with, the comments about religion, politics, militarism, economic systems are all pretty much aligned against the teachings of Torah. They just don't match at all what Yahweh had asked us to do. And consequently, there are three definitions of for the souls who choose these ways. But we'll get into that probably another time. But let me read to you the ten tablets in stone, what it says to start with. God conveyed all of these words, providing perspective in our presence, saying that I am Yahweh, your God, who relationally brought you out of and delivered you from the realm of the crucible of Egypt. Now, he's talking to the Yehudim and the Israelites that he has just brought out from Egypt on Mount Horeb. And they're presented the tablets of stone that Moshe gives to Moshe. Now remember, Yahweh wrote these with his own hand. Out of the crucible of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and of course, that's Mizraim, you shall not exist, he says, you shall not exist. These are the non-negotiable deals. You shall not exist with other additional gods in relation to my presence. Now, I don't know how simple you can put it, but let's think about this just for a minute. Other gods. Yahweh starts out by telling you what his name is. If we're not talking about Yahweh, then we have to be talking about some other God, because that's who he said, this is who I am. And he's presented himself to them. In fact, they've been walking with him out of Egypt, and they've seen all these marvelous things he's done to deliver them. Therefore, Scott, Yahweh can't be Jehovah, can he?
No, he can't be Jesus or any of that either.
He can't be Jesus. He can't be Jehovah. He cannot be Hashem, the name. He can't be any of a number of them. He's very, very plain. Don't have these. And he says, if you want to be with me, you cannot have, you cannot associate with other gods. Further, he will say, you shall not prepare or produce for yourself accordingly a carved image or idol or any visual representation of something which is in heaven and the heavens above, or which is on the earth, the land below, or that which is in the waters beneath the land. You shall not bow down and worship them or speak for them, and you shall not serve them. For indeed, he says, I, Yahweh, your God, am zealous and jealous. Now, he's making it pretty dead gum clear, and this was difficult for people like me who are artists for a living. We don't until we really realize it. We are known to some of the best things you can sell if you want to make a living is pictures of patriotic stuff, pictures of religious imagery. I've had people come to me and say, you know, if you would paint a if you would paint Jesus pictures, you know, we could really sell those Jesus pictures. And there's Madonna and Charles and all that sort of thing, even icons that for the Greek Orthodox Church, they're very, very, very big in that sort of stuff as well. So he says, absolutely, don't prepare it, don't make it, don't carve it. That doesn't mean you can't make a picture of things, but he said, don't do these things. And it's interesting that he uses terms like things under the water. And you don't really think about that, but consider something just a minute. How many times have you driven behind some car and there's some little fish, Christian fish symbol? You're saying those, right?
A ton.
Yeah. That would mean you can't have sun god heads, what I call sun god heads. Those are the halos around the heads of the saints, or the there are no saints. You can't have Madonna and child, Mary and it's not so much that it was a picture of a mother and child. It's the fact that they worship it like it is, or they put candles, burn candles in front of it, and that sort of thing. Bacchus, Dionysus, Osiris, Talmud, and you say, well, wait a minute, we don't worship those guys. Listen, Jesus is Dionysus. Jesus that's presented in the New Testament under the influence of Paul's writing is exactly the same as Dionysus, the Greek god version of Talmud. He's the same in the Egyptian as Osiris, and he's the same in the Roman as Bacchus. And Yahweh is making very, very clear, you can't bring that stuff and be around me. So, understand, this is the deal. This is non-negotiable. This is a choice you have to make. And then he goes on to say, now we left off where, for indeed I, Yahweh, your God, am a zealous and a jealous God, counting and reckoning the perversities and sins of twisting and distorting of the fathers upon the children concerning the third and fourth generation of those who hate and are hostile to me. But you might protest and say, well, I don't hate you, God. Well, obviously, if you don't listen to him and you do opposite of what he says, and then you teach your children to do the same thing. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was taught to celebrate Christmas. I was taught to celebrate Easter. You know, we got dressed up and did our little Halloween candy thing. We knew, we had Catholic friends, of course. I was a Protestant, so raised here. Protestant.
All those holidays, Christmas, Easter. Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. I mean, it's hard for people because a lot of us knew that as a family tradition type of thing. But God said his family and his traditions with his family are different. He wants to have his people with his family celebrating the Moed Mikre, the meetings that he sets up to be with him, where we read his word and study his word and feast and party with him. And all of these are totally, if you're not aware of that, it doesn't take very long to do a little bit of research, and you'll find that all of these things are pagan. They're all cult-like, pagan, related to the Lord.
And they still are.
And they still are, and they always will be. And he's saying, don't. Now, interesting enough, this is exactly what he asked Abraham to do. If you recall, his first comment to Abraham was, walk away. Walk away from where? Walk away from Ur. Ur was no different. It was the other cradle of civilization, like Egypt. Filled with his religion, filled with his politics, filled with his economic schemes, filled with his military. So he's restating pretty much the terms and conditions of the covenant right here in the first part on the first tablet of the stone. And interesting, you know, what he said, if you recall a moment ago, he was counting and reckoning the perversities and the sins of twisting and distorting, that's manipulating or perverting, changing things, of the fathers, the parents, upon the children. And he says that will go on for the third and fourth. They will be ignored, basically, for the third and the fourth generation of those who hate and are hostile to me. He doesn't view it as just, oh, you're having a good time over at somebody else's house. He views it as you hate me. And he's making it very, very, very clear.
Well, and really it's not hard to follow. He says in relation to me. If you're gonna have the relations with him, then why would you turn to any of those other things?
Well, wouldn't it be like a man bringing his mistress home? I mean, come on. What do you think the wife's going to do? She's going to say, nope, no. Both of you can get out.
I'd like you to meet my wife.
I mean, I don't mean to laugh, but it's so stupid. I mean, when you realize what these things are, you have to say, gosh.
And like you said, none of these things on the tablets are strict rules.
No.
It's you shouldn't make a habit of lying and things like that. Nothing is a strict rule that where as soon as you do it, you're out. You know.
No. Otherwise, we'd all be out. I mean, there'd be nobody left. I mean, because we've all done these things.
Otherwise, the first man would be out.
Yeah,
Adam would be gone already.
Yeah, there'd be no way back.
Yeah. So, but once you start to go down the path, all these things are pretty easy, pretty straightforward things.
Well, I love the way Yoda puts it. You know, once you put light in a room, the darkness goes away. It doesn't smother it. It's not like a nasty spray a pleasant spray you're spraying over something, a nasty smell or something. It's gone. Light makes darkness go away. So when Yahweh, when you do turn away from that and you do walk to Him, you become enlightened. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the last hour. We didn't talk about it in depth, but it was the light. It was they came into the ark. Of the Noah's Ark, the family became light, and they became perfect. So it wasn't that they were before. It's just when they came into the light, they became perfect. So you can certainly walk away from it. But the tragedy here is he's mentioning something that's going to play out a little bit when we get to the next ones, where he's talking about the fathers are destroying their children up to the third and fourth generations. Now he's talking about Yehudim and the Israelites that are right there with him. And this is what, if they turn away, this is what they're going to do to their children. And it'll take many generations before he'll be able to get them back. Now, Scott, I wanted to speak just a minute towards this father thing, this parent thing, where he is warning these people in particular that they would be punished 3 to 4 the third up into the third and fourth generation for teaching their children by twisting and distorting, manipulating, if you would, his words, which they do, and they will. Their history proves that they did certainly go in that direction, and rather quickly, unfortunately. Now, there's the other side is for the people who left the area and moved into other parts of the world, they will never hear it. You know, I also hear sometimes some people, they say, well, these people didn't have an opportunity. Well, if your parents leave and take you far away, all the way to Asia, all the way to Africa, bottom of Africa, all the way to this or to America, what have you, if they take you away and they take you away from all light, you know, that Jerusalem is where the information flows, right? It's where the salvation comes from, Jerusalem, Shalom. So when you keep going further and further away, then you doom your children more and more and more and more and more. So it's even harder. It goes beyond these people who were at least local and could find the source of life again more easily than you can the further you go away. So you're killing your own children when you walk away. So far we found that we know who Yahweh is. We know what his name is because he introduced himself to us, and we're beginning to understand what he wants from us. And now if we proceed on, he says, but I, now after he's already said of those who are hostile and hate me, but I, he says, I will prepare, perform, and produce unmerited and unfailing mercy, unearned favor, and undeserved kindness to thousands who love me and who closely observe, isn't that interesting, who closely observe the terms and conditions of my binding covenant contract. The words there, of course, are chesed. So now we're finding out what the offer is. He will, if you do walk away from these things, if you don't twist and distort what I have to say and teach your children correctly instead of incorrectly and share that with them, I will give to you, this gets back to what our conversation was about, if these were laws, we would be doomed. He will give to you unmerited, unearned, unfailing mercy, unearned favor, undeserved kindness, which is just said, which is steadfast, loyal love, a totally devoted and affectionate relationship. Wow. So, don't do that. Come to me. I will give you this. And he says, quite interestingly enough, Scott, he says to thousands who love me. Thousands, let's see, thousands, that's not millions. And that ain't billions. So we find only a few that will read this and respond appropriately. And that is tragic. That is heartbreaking at the absolute worst. It is just horrible that so many will pass this by and not respond. And, but he said, in order to get that, she said, that undeserved kindness, that unearned favor and mercy, what did he say to do? He said to observe Shamar. That's what we're doing. We're not doing anything other than studying it, carefully examining it, caring about it, working hard to turn over every stone to see how much we can know, to observe, Shamar, the terms and conditions of my binding covenant contract. And a covenant contract is that thing which binds the two parties. And that is called the mitzvah. The word he would actually have used here was be mitzvah. Are you familiar with the word mitzvah?
I've heard it before, Craig has talked to me about it before, but mm-hmm. It doesn't jump to my mind right away.
Okay, well let me break it down just a little bit. I've got two words here. We've got a covenant, and we also have mitzvah. Now the covenant agreement is the whole body of what I will be doing, what he will do with us, and what his terms and conditions are, but the mitzvah is just the authoritative directives and the codicils of the agreement. Now, if you break down covenant, contract, by the letters, is quite interesting, and we're going to do that when we return. Okay, now we're going to cover those two words that I alluded to right before we left, and the my only apology to the audience is that I have... I start out kind of all nervous and all excited about doing this thing, and then by the time I relax, all of a sudden all the time's gone. So, in any case, let's cover these two words. We probably won't get to the covenant contract, but it is all right there for you to read, and certainly at maybe another time, Scott and I might be called upon to do something. We can finish this off. But the covenant, we will at least learn the name, learn how the word works and what the word means, or what the name means. The covenant, of course, is a contract. It is a personal agreement between Yahweh and us. And if we broke those letters down, you would have Bereth, Beit, a Rosh, a He, a Yod, and a Tal. And those five letters, you start out with the Beit, and of course that is the symbol of a household. We talked about that a little earlier, a couple of times. And the Beit, obviously it has a familiar family tone about the whole thing. It is about family and a home. It is to do with the Rosh, which are the people who observe. Remember he said Shamar. Shamar means to carefully examine, closely consider, to observe, in short, observe the words that Yahweh has spoken in this particular contract. And Rosh, that is the symbol of a man or a woman, a person who is doing that. Then the next letter, Bereth, is an H, and that's a He, and that is a symbol of a person who is now engaged. They have considered the offer to be part of the family, and this way I'm reading it. They have considered the offer. They are now standing up. They are engaged. Their hands are raised to reach up to Yahweh, and they are in a walking position, standing. They're straight. They are upright. They're not bent over. They're not bowing down, kissing somebody's ring. They're engaged. Everywhere Yahweh goes, he engages people to walk with him, from walking in the garden to Abraham walking out of Ur to the children of Israel walking out of Egypt, and even today. And don't forget that the witnesses, the eyewitnesses to Yahusha, they all, he said, come walk with me, you know, follow me. And then the third letter, of course, is a yod, which is that hand representing Yahweh, reaching down and across with an open hand to lift us up, because he wants us to be upright and walk with him, to be part, come up from where we are to where he is. And the last one of covenant is the last letter, is a tall. And a tall is that T, it's pronounced like a, just like a T. And the tall, of course, is the upright pole, significant there. It is the mark, it has a cross peg, so it's a mark. And it means also signature. God's signature is on his Bereth covenant. So, I mean, in addition to just looking up the words and seeing what they mean, you'll find that. But he reinforces that with every letter that he uses to make up these words. Now, the mitzvah is the authoritative directives and the codicils of this contract. The mitzvah is written with four letters. We have a mem, which is like waves of water. It's where we get our letter M. And the mem is feminine generally. It is life-giving, therefore feminine. It is the waters of life. And interesting enough, the second letter, Scott, is sod, to sod. And that is a picture of a person who is laying down, resting. Which is quite interesting, because the heavy load of this agreement is done by Yahweh. He says that he's going to do all the work. He goes through Passover. He does matzah, all the work, and we are resting secure in that he would be doing the work. So it's a strange set of letters if this is somebody who has to do something in the sense of obey some kind of things, or to really be carrying a heavy load. The heavy load is not being carried by us. We are in a restful state. And the results of, on the third letter of mitzvah, is the OW sound, the wah, which is, once again, the tent peg that secures and enlarges the family home. And then the last letter, the last letter in this word, mitzvah, has an H sound, and the H is from the hay. And as we've mentioned also just earlier, that the hay is the person standing up, upright, engaged with Yah, and able to walk with him and to him. So we have learned now that Yahweh has a name. We know a lot about what he is like and what he wants. We've been given the offer. We've been told that it is a binding contract. He will do the work, and we'll get undeserved mercy and favor. And I think that's pretty darn exciting. And we are still on the first tablet, and we have one other part on that first tablet, and I'm going to cover that real quick because of time. We will do as much as we can today, and I'm delighted to have had this opportunity. He says, Yahweh says, you shall not lift up, bear, or advance through the name or reputation of Yahweh, your God, lifeless and worthless deceptions, or devastating and destruction falsehoods. For indeed, Yahweh, he will not forgive, leave unpunished those who relationally deceive, beguile, in association with his name, to promote, to effect, in effect, vain and ineffectual lies, which lead to lifelessness and destruction. Now, very quickly, what he has said is, he will not tolerate people who change his name, who advance their doctrines with his reputation by saying, I have come in the name of Yahweh, I have come in the name of the Lord, and try to present it as such as that Yahweh, his name is Lord, which is not. Lord is Satan's title. And he says he will not forgive them. In fact, he won't leave them unpunished. He's really mad about this stuff. And that probably was my trigger in this whole thing, is to learn his name, because I was so disappointed that you know, if you're going to meet somebody and get to know them, you like to call them by their name. I mean, that's just axiomatic. You certainly would want to. I know your name is Scott, and we talk in terms, and you know my name is Kirk, and we talk back and forth. If it was only on a polite level, we should at least know each other's name.
I'd feel really bad if I'd been calling you Steve this whole time.
Yeah, well, I would have corrected you.
I know.
That's just annoying. But when you're Yahweh, when you're the Almighty, when you're the creator of the universe, when you provided everything, and these people knew. He's warning people who will know his name, and they will go off and change his name. They will make it, they will outlaw it, and not even a, they will actually kill people who use his name. And Yahweh says, people, my children know my name, they shout it from the rooftops. He uses it 7,000 times throughout the entire Torah. 7,000 times. And there's about 3,500 times his name is attached to the names of prophets like Yashayah or Yahochanan, later in one of the eyewitnesses that was given the revelation. So, and so this is an unforgivable thing. You cannot be part of his family if you do these things. It's just, and in this particular case, he says he's going to punish. Now, the other people, if you ignore God, as you know, your soul will just be diminished. He says multiple times, I can't prove it to you on the spot right now, but we could certainly do a whole day on what happens to the soul. You're either going to be part of his life and live eternally with him by agreeing to the terms and conditions of the contract, or you will just die. Your soul can die. Your soul, as he told Nicodemus, cannot exist unless it's attached to a spirit. So if you turn away, you'll just die. When your body dies, your soul will die with it. That's not a punishment. It just is no longer any more life. It certainly is not an advantage, but it's not a horrible thing. But in this particular case, he says he's going to punish him. Now, punishment means you've got to be alive in order to be punished. And these people, they are joined. They will only way they will live eternally because they joined another spirit by promoting other gods, by changing his name, by changing the jots and tittles, as it were, by changing the letters, by changing the strokes on the letters, and twisting the words. So he's pretty clear, as far as I can tell, and I don't think I'm doing anything in extreme. These things are non-negotiable. These things you must do if you want to be part of his family. And if you don't, that's okay. He won't punish you. But if you fight against him, he's going to be very angry at you, and he's going to he will punish you for those. If I misread anything, I may not have read it clearly, but if I misinterpreted anything, is there any argument on any of those points that you could see where I might could have said it clearer, perhaps, but I can't think of anything that I've said wrong about those.
There's nothing that I disagree with on what you're saying. Yeah. So I'm sure that if somebody disagrees, I'll probably hear about it later today.
Well, they'll have to take it up with Yahweh.
Well,
because he's pretty clear on what he says. So all you can do is quote it, and then the more you study it, the more you find out he is the real deal. There is some more sections now that I'm gonna try to read. Just one point here that we need to cover. And that is the next statements, or basically just they start to move now into the category of those things that he wants you to do so that you will have a better life. He says to remember the Sabbath day, the set-apart day. 6 days you get to work. You shall do the work in your service of representing the messenger and proclaiming the message. You should be telling your children these things and also your neighbors and all as well. But the seventh day, he said, that's the Sabbath day. That's the day when Yahweh, your God, you shall not do any part of the work of God's representatives and messengers, because you can't do it anyway. Yourself, nor your son, your daughter, your servants, your employees, or any of the means of the productions, nor your visitors who relationally are in your home, your property, and your community. For indeed, he says, in days Yahweh made accordingly the heaven, in 6 days Yahweh made accordingly the heaven and the earth and the seas and all which were relationally, and it became settled during the seventh day. And we'll wrap this up on the next segment.
Well, Scott, the time just flies by when you're having fun. We were talking about the Sabbath day, the next statement that Yah gives in his tablets of stone. And he says how he became completely settled during the seventh day. And therefore, Yah were blessed and adored the Sabbath. And he set the day apart. Kodesh is the word he uses there for set apart. It's a special day. He knows you're going to have to work. He knows you're going to have a lot of things to do because he knew that when he threw him out of the garden, when he said you can no longer live here. You've made your choice. You wanted to listen to the serpent and you didn't want to listen to me. So go out there and live. And he says life is going to be more difficult, obviously. And that's true. But he said to these people and to all of those who listen to this, all of Israel, he said, all of those who strive with him, if you accept the agreement and become part of my family, I want you also to set aside this day, which is Saturday. It's on Friday night to Saturday night. I want you to set aside this day each week to spend time with me. I mean, that would be what all parents and children, all parents like that with their children. They want them to spend some time with them. So he says, set aside this time to be with me, where we're in a more relaxed state. We're not working, so put everything else aside and spend that time with me. And I don't think that's a terrible request. I think that is a tremendous benefit. And he says, don't let anybody else do the working on that day if you can avoid it. Now, once again, these are volitional, and you cannot make a habit of doing those things. You should not make a habit of doing these things. There are going to be times when you have to do something. We'll have to work on a day or when we just can't avoid it. But he wants you to spend time with him. That's everything we've read has either been, don't do this, this is bad for you. Please do this, this is really good for you. Please spend time with me. I want to have a relationship with you. I want to be part of your family. Spend time with me. Read my word, because all your answers will be there. One of the quotes that I read, it says is that the Torah is perfect. It has everything you need in there. In fact, even to understand 6 days how he created the world. I think Roy is going to be on in a show sometime in the next week or two or something like that, where they'll be talking about the physics of proving that Yahweh did what he said he would do in the context of 6 days. And that's an exciting program. I'm looking forward to that one. But everything we've done, now the rest of the things that we won't have time to cover today, or the statements in stone, where he will go through, obviously, these are just things that you should think about that are not very hard to recognize, that it's good and beneficial for you not to murder someone. It's good and beneficial that you don't commit adultery, that you don't steal, and you don't testify or lie to people, and you don't covet other people's stuff. The benefits of accepting the covenant are so great. The things that you're offered are so marvelous that to want these piddly things that other people have is so ridiculous. I mean, and even those are written in a way, they're couched in a terminology that says don't make a habit of it. You're going to do some lousy things sometime. You're going to make some bad steps along the way, as we all are. As I do, and as you do, and everyone else does.
You might also have a situation where the act that he's saying is warranted.
Yeah.
If Robin and Neil are in trouble, and the only way I can save them is to kill the person threatening them, I'm going to do that. And that would be me doing something that was necessary.
Yeah. And that's not that. I mean, you remember Moshe started out his career in the desert by he attacked the guy who was killing someone.
Yep.
And he knew that they would kill him for that. So he had to escape and run off to Arabia for many years before he was called in to draw the people out of Egypt. That's not really the issue as much as you, obviously, as much as don't make a habit of this. Don't join the mafia. Don't join the army. The army is about killing people. We don't send people over to foreign countries to protect Southern California.
Well, yeah, if you do it one time, that's one thing. But if you find yourself doing it over and over and over again, well, now we're into that habit thing. Don't make a habit of it.
You know, if you're going to be unfaithful to your wife all your life, then you're a bum. I mean, don't do that. If you're going to steal stuff, I mean, you're untrustworthy. These are just normal considerations of things. This is how you run a society so that we can all live together in comfort and peace and be happy without fearing, I got to protect everything. But, Scott, I've enjoyed it tremendously, and I hope maybe we can do it again sometime.
Definitely.